We're in chapter 4, and we finished through verse 6, so beginning in verse 7 of chapter 4. Solomon looks out at life and the things he's seen in life from a young man of 15 or 20 when he assumed the kingship to now he may possibly be at 55 years old or so. And he has seen a lot. Many of the things he talks about, he may not have experienced himself or thought that way or acted upon other people that way. But he's seen it. And he reflects on that throughout this book. And it teaches us a lesson that when we look out at our lives, as he looked at other lives and his life, that he's wondering, what's the end point? How can I be productive in this life? How can I be good and be a person of good works? And he explains in the book a lot of faults that people have and misconceptions. He looks at the character of people. And he wants them to have better character. He looks at the world around him, the universe around him, and he sees that there are constants. And that man thinks he's so great, he's so powerful, that he can change and alter those things that are not changeable. So he reflects on that as a vanity and a worthless effort. And as we've seen in verses here, we're going to see a few more verses coming up. He says, look at life. Look at your life. Look at the short time that you're living here and be productive in it. Don't waste your time, especially on works and pursuits that you can't take with you. But enjoy life, because it truly is a gift of God. So we know he goes down a lot of trails and thoughts throughout this book. Whether it's rulership, or viewing the nature, viewing the accumulation of things, how you treat other people. And he reflects on that. So it is really a good book to us to reflect on from time to time. Now, there may be portions in this book that may not apply for today exactly, but there's a principle involved. And hopefully we can work on those principles. And your input's always, always valuable, always valuable. So as we begin today in chapter 4 and verse 7, he transitions here to a time where relationships are better. You know, we can do things on our own, and we think we can accomplish things on our own. But is it not better sometimes to have a partner, another relationship that you can work that towards that end, that you can have a companionship that helps you in this life? Maybe to relieve some of the vanity of this life and make it more productive so that you can see some good in things that you can do. So he transitions in this section here, beginning in verse 7 of chapter 4, and dealing with these lasting relationships. And as he starts that, he said, "Well, then I looked again at vanity under the sun." But again, there's some positives to this part. And when he looks at these relationships, he says in verse 8, there was a certain man without a dependent, having neither a son nor a brother, yet there was no end to all his labor. Indeed, his eyes were not satisfied with riches, and he never asked, and for whom am I laboring and depriving myself of pleasure? And he concludes, this too is vanity and a grievous task. Now, this certain man says he doesn't have an heir. He doesn't have a dependent. He doesn't have someone else with him in working. And not even a brother or son. That's kinfolk. Okay? Yet, he says, there's no end to my labor. And he makes it that way. There's no end to my labor. I keep working hard to acquire these riches. If I'm not going to share them with someone, to acquire these riches. And so he's really working for himself. And it could be riches or power, whatever it is. I think sometimes the power is the worst attribute one can have. You can really hurt more people with that. And indeed, his eyes were not satisfied with riches. And he never asked, and for whom am I laboring, depriving myself of pleasure? You know, he never asked that of himself. I'm not getting pleasure out of this. I'm laboring, depriving myself. And he says, at the end of this, Solomon says, this too is just vanity. And he expands on that in these next few verses in this part here, 4 through 7. What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? Sure, you could acquire things, you can move forward, but that's your entire intent in life. It's going to be a grievous task. A grievous task. And in verse 9 through 12, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. Your life can be futile, but if you're sharing it with someone else, and it does give you some purpose if you're sharing with someone else, because you can talk back and forth. You see a commonality of goal. And you're not truly, truly independent. And so he just briefly talks about this in these few verses. And his he says that this portion of life, even if you're sharing it with someone, someone's a companion, those are things that we can make life a little better. Because sometimes our decision by ourselves and a pathway to go, does it have enough data? Does it have enough information? And we may act on a whim sometimes. We may act, I control everything, so I'm going to make the decision. Well, a companion sometimes, a helper, who thinks like you do or a little different, can really add a great of depth to that decision making and how you proceed in your life. And in other words, reach out for help. Reach out for a companion, a helper, one who you can bounce ideas off of. In business, you'll see some businesses prosper when they do that. You feel like you're part of the team. And in some businesses, it's a single person rule, a single family rule. And that business has a difficulty in surviving because they've got their prejudices and that sort of thing. So it's a truism that he's talking about here. And this is something he sees under the sun. Under the sun. Yes, ma'am.
Ourselves instead of each other helping with the task. And extend a helping hand to that friend. They just want what they need. And also of marriage, marriages like that you mentioned in family, brothers, sisters, you know, whatever, nieces, nephews. The New Testament talks about helping even in a family if someone's in need. So it's a great lesson across the board, whatever kind of relationship that you have.
Linda brought up the word teamwork, and that's exactly right. A team of two. A team of two in a marriage. A team of two and a sister and a sister. And a brother and a brother. Teamwork in the congregation. If one doesn't want to dominate, one consults one to another. In a home. Those are positives. Really positives. And I think it works for a joyous relationship, at least a non-contentious relationship. I know sometimes we saw in the news that different political views happened at Thanksgiving. Well, that should be a time where you talk about those views and don't talk over other people. And what can I say? We mentioned it before. Listen. Listen, okay? It's a great attribute that one can have. And Linda's point about teamwork, if the goal of life or a business, okay, is plain and you can see it, then everyone should need to see it and move towards that goal. And with us here in the congregation, what would be our goal? One to another. To promote what? Greater faith? Greater commitment? That comes through relationships. So it's an interesting point that he brings up here, and I think one that can help us. I know it's one that can help us in this life. So sharing is better and enjoy fruit of your labor. Now, in verse 10, for if either of them falls, and one will lift his companion, but woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. Again, working on the same point, that people fall, whether emotionally or in their labors, okay, or a physical fall. There's helper is needed. It may not be friendship, but he's certainly a helper and a companion. And he stresses that point here as a way to live in life. And yes, ma'am.
From childhood.
Ah, okay. That's a good thing to teach, isn't it? Now, when I was in school, we had four of us had a gang. We protected each other, okay? It's kind of like that, all right? And we didn't run, all right? But you gain respect, all right? And there is value in that. memories, all right. Where am I at? All right. Was a certain man without a dependent, having neither a son nor a brother, yet there was no end to all his labor. He didn't have, because he kept working for the labor. Indeed, his eyes were not satisfied with riches, and he never asked. He never asked. He didn't even consider what the value of a companion is to his efforts. He never asked. And for whom am I laboring and depriving myself of pleasure? And the conclusion there, this is a grievous task, is vanity. Yes, it is. When a man has this attitude, a person has this attitude, that I'm going to keep striving for the things that I want, irregardless of need for another. So the great, great, great point here. Yes, sir.
He's building on that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
When you look at what it says here, it's not that, I mean, it's not only that he's doing this, it seems his purpose is to work for these gains, but he's not even enjoying it. He has no one he's leaving it to. He's not sharing it with anybody. So it just, the description of what he is striving for is, there's nothing. He's not even going to do it.
And that's why the added point, sure, it's a vanity, but it's a grievous task, too. The road to nowhere, let's say. Okay? And don't we feel better when we share with others? Okay? Physical things, advice, counseling. And that's what we're here for, okay? Because we have a goal in our purpose these days. Yes. And he goes on to illustrate the point in verse 9. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. Same idea again. Okay? A good return. It is better. Again, check the word better out. You'll see it over and over. In verse 10, for if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. Okay? And we mentioned that. And verse 11, furthermore, in addition to, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Interesting passage. Something that may have been a thing that was necessary in the colder months in Syria and over Jerusalem. And I know sometimes when you're camping out, how many have camped out in the colder months? It's cold. And it's good to have a good bag. Or even the idea that you have a lesser clothing, a companion, a help. Well, some people like a big dog, okay, all right? But those sort of things, okay, are necessary apparently at this time. I was looking at the weather patterns for a year in Jerusalem. And basically, it's under 70 degrees most of the year. I don't know about you, 70 is cold to me. I mean, if I'm not covered up and that sort of thing. And it gets down to around less than 50, you know, in 3 or 4 months of the year, beginning in November. So it's an interesting idea there that they dealt with the warmth. But again, it extends to business, it extends to keeping one comfortable, too, okay? And so just a point that was in their society at that time. Now, in verse 12, if anyone can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. Well, that's pretty obvious, isn't it? Okay? Want a thief or a robber? Yes, yes, Alex. Yes, it certainly is. We need each other in a congregation. Your neighbor next door needs you. And you may need them. I know I try with my neighbor during power outages and that sort of thing to share my generator with them. And you're appreciative of that. So there's many things you can do, you know, with the neighbor. Not to mention the congregation here. And that's one reason that we can think about when someone's ill or in a hospital or having difficulties at home, that we can comfort them. It doesn't have to be a big way. Small things matter. I see some heads nodding. And it's just to make the effort. If you think about it, do it. Okay? And it may not be reciprocal, but it's certainly you do it. You do it. Okay? All right. And cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. That's just an idea of strength, okay? There's strength in numbers when you're combating those things that would hurt you. Now, in verse 13, it's an interesting transition here now, in 13 through 16. Here are rulers. And we got a ruler, I'm the ruler. No one questions me or they die. But what's interesting is the next part, and it talks about the fleeting nature of politics, I guess you'd say, and rulership. As Solomon is observing here, that even the greatest of rulers highly esteemed, great popularity, even they can be displaced by another ruler. So you never think you're that secure because your popularity is, that word starts on F, fleeting. We can see it every 4 years or 2 years in this country, and other countries have parliamentary systems. They call for votes quickly. You don't have to wait years. But he's making the point here that, again, even in life, you think you can rule for, you know, till death, from 15 years old till death, popularity is fleeting, even for kings, great dictators. And that's the nature of life. And so it says, in beginning in verse 13, the next few verses, a poor yet wise lad is better than, that word better again, better than an old and foolish king who no longer knows how to receive instruction. It's an interesting point. When you get older and you've had this rule, you don't want to listen to anybody. You don't want to hear advice. You don't want how to change some of your rules that you had. People evolve. And so the rulership should evolve also. Again, staying with good moral standards. But there's some evolution there. And some people just don't listen when they've got the power. And so even a young guy who's wise can be, have a great appeal, okay, to those who are serving the king. Now, in the verse 14, continuing the same thought, for he has come out of prison to become king, even though he was born poor in your kingdom. I researched this and thought about the idea of prison. And some thoughts are the idea that he didn't have a royal lineage. He was just a nobody, I guess you'd say. He wasn't from a rich family. But this young lad who's got wisdom, you know, is becoming more and more popular. Yes, ma'am. Dave was a poor lad, wasn't he? And he was wise. Okay?
That's all they want to listen to.
That's right. Good example. And, let's take Joseph. Same idea, right? Okay? Joseph becomes second in command under the Pharaoh. And very popular. Okay? But David's the good example of that. And of course, they didn't vote in those days, but certainly if people won't follow you, your rulership, whatever it is, falls. Even in presidents, I guess, okay, and whatever it is. If your staff wants to leave you all the time, okay, and your big turnover, that's an indication of your leadership. What if you're ruling a country, what would make you liked in that country that they'd want to keep you? What?
Citizens?
Okay. What would make you like to keep that ruler?
Taking care of
your people. How can you do that? Listen to them. I'm going to take care of them by having a massive army. And anybody says anything about my country or me, I crush them. Does that promote? Well, you've got the people who are in the army dying, don't you? Does a good economy help a rulership? Yes. Does a clear pronouncement of where we're going as a country, that give you confidence in that leadership? It does. So leaders have a great responsibility to communicate. And that falters sometimes, but again, you would, if you have a heart, okay, you would forgive that ruler as long as he learns from that issue. So that's the makeup of a good ruler. And again, Solomon had no wars while he was in his 40 years or so. And it's nice to know that your sons and daughters are not going to die or go off to have that potential for that. That they too can live as long as you lived. But there may come a time that that's necessary. And verse 15, I've seen all the living under the sun, as the king he has, thronged to the side of the second lad who replaces him. We've seen that. We've just talked about it. That they go to that second lad because the present ruler wouldn't, as Dawn said, listen. Listen. Okay? Now, in verse 16, now, here comes the vanity of life. There is no end to all the people, to all who were before them, and even to ones who will come later. Will not be happy with them. the rulers. There comes a time in all rulership that you're going to have a change of leadership. And in this case, I think it's involuntary. And that's just the way it is in living in this physical body. As Solomon looks out at that, he sees it in the kingdoms around him. The great pharaohs have passed on. He sees it in the, we see it today in changing borders over there in Europe. All those, Afghanistan and stands over there. They all change names all the time and still will. And so things to think about. And again, he recognized that and he says, this true is vanity, and striving after wind. And again, there comes a time when change of leadership is necessary, when you do not listen. Good thoughts, good wisdom from this man of wisdom. Now, any thoughts? Now, and again, I guess it applies all times too, doesn't it? Their time, our time, the future. Yes, sir.
And in this section, I don't know if this is where you bookmark it, but 7 through 16, I think, is kind of how you look at it. Is, look, you may be by yourself, you may work hard, but who are you doing? Companionship is better. You have an old foolish king, and you're going to have this, may have this. I've seen it. I've seen this lad who's been in prison or who's pressed, who's come up and risen. But ultimately, he starts and ends with this vanity under the sun. Whether, who are you doing it for if you're by yourself? And even with companionship, which is better, still, what does it matter? I mean, in comparison to eternity, which is kind of the implication of all the entirety of the book. So I don't, so we can look at the snippets of, having written Proverbs, you can see the wisdom in what he's writing, but ultimately, let's look at it in the context of being single, but your feet, that's good. Companionship is better because at least you're doing it with somebody. And you may have an old foolish king, riches for which everybody can rob, that's going to save our lives. But ultimately, what's the purpose? Vanity under the sun, because ultimately, you live and you die. The hereafter that we should be thinking about.
And again, as you see it, it's inferring a future, okay? But he's living in the present world, is what he sees. Again, he had his difficulties in his offspring, okay? And what can I say, okay? Vanity under the sun. No profit in it. No advantage. And that's not the way to live. The way to recognize the world lives. But we need to understand that our life is short, a few years, quote unquote. Linda makes the point, you can't please all the people all the time, I guess you'd say. Okay? And people are fickle. People are independent. People have their heritage. They have their growing up standards. And some people just will not change or listen. Okay? And again, when you have the higher goal, okay, it should, because that's the essence of Christianity, isn't it? Change? Okay? Change for the good. So that's a good lesson for us today, even though it's, like I said before, 10,000 years old, 1,000 years old. Okay? Now, in our questions page 20, the characteristics of the certain man, which you should have got that out of verse 8, and he didn't have dependents, he works constantly, not satisfied with riches. Does not know the purpose of constant work. And the grievous task in verse 8 is working and not satisfied and no dependence to share that wealth. He works and works and works and nowhere to share it. What's the purpose of the work? To share. And in Question number four on page 21, three reasons, two are better than one. There's a good return for your labor. Your direction for your labor has possibilities of change. Increase your labor, I guess, okay? Increase your popularity or wealth. And of course, we talk about the warmth, one another, and two can resist a robber or a thief. Practical things, everyday things. And that there's value in that. Now, verse 5, what is the point of section 4, 7 through 12? Lasting relationships. They're better than selfish pursuit of riches. Lasting relationships. I can see one mature. I can see one grow. I can see one deteriorate, but I'm going to help. And does not wisdom come out of lasting relationships? It does. Okay? And verse 6, why is the foolish king, verse 13, why is the king foolish? He no longer receives instruction or warnings. Instruction is one thing, but when you warn someone, oh, you're telling me what to do. Well, yes and no. Hopefully I'm giving you good advice, reasoned advice. But warnings are good, okay? Hopefully, when you hit your brakes in your car and it doesn't stop like it used to, or it pulls pretty hard to one side, is that a warning? Okay? Or you just keep on going. I can make it another day. Well, there's things you need to judge on that. Of course, that's very practical, okay? If you're having pains in your chest, and it just doesn't quite go away, what do you do? Well, I made it today. You ought to get that examined. So warnings in that physical sense is one thing. But warnings of good counseling, okay? Again, God has given us all the ability to change and to change our minds and free will. That's what God wants. All right. Why does the lad replace the king? Well, apparently he has more popularity and wisdom. Well, they like his ideas. Plus, the big deal is king wouldn't listen to his subjects. Even though there's no vote involved, you still got to have a good spirit in your army and your people and your business. Because a king doesn't rule alone. He's got a lot of aides that do help him to accomplish what he wants to do. Solomon, when he built the temple, can you imagine if he didn't have the confidence and the support of those who built the temple? There may be foundation issues. It was the idea of not the superior materials used in the temple. So there could be a lot of things where shortcuts have been done. But I believe they respected Solomon because the world around him respected him. God had given him this task to do. So things were built well when they built the temple. And again, the purpose of the temple. Okay. So it helps to have that support from those who do the work. Now, and what does this illustrate about popularity then and now? I think we talked a lot about that. Sometimes the leadership in a church has a popularity issue. Sometimes preachers have an issue with the congregation. So we see that every day. And we're not running the popularity contest. But as long as our ideas are to deal with truth, of quote unquote, in the best way we can, knowing that we do falter sometimes, not always correct. But a good attitude will always help us in dealing with leadership. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, Rehoboam. The wisdom of Solomon, disregarded. It could have been a great kingdom. But God's will be done. Yes, ma'am.
Solomon didn't follow his own advice.
Yeah.
He had good wives. Be better.
Yeah. And he'll be judged for that. As we saw in Ecclesiastes 3:16-17, God will judge. And I'm glad God's judging, because sometimes I don't know which way to go sometimes, you know, in dealing with people. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Popular doesn't mean capable. I guess we see that in politics, huh? All right? A good orator, okay? But what are your policies? Well, don't worry about that. I'm a good orator, all right? And there's something to be said about being a good orator. It certainly is. Good point, Dawn. Good point. Now, Chapter 5. This is really a hard transition to those things of the Maker, the Creator, God, where he deals with religion, I guess you'd say. And his real theme is dealing that, and as you read these, remember the idea of formalism, the idea of a vain worship. The idea of going through the motions without the right attitude is really what he's dealing with. He's seen this under the sun. And the principle is there for us today. The principle is there for us today. So appreciate you keep reading. And gee, we're all ready. Chapter 5. But I won't be here Wednesday, and maybe next Sunday. I'm not sure, but Steve's going to teach something of his choosing or whatever he wants to do. So, again, appreciate you. Again, pray for the members here. Pray for the families that are in some distress. And pray for healing among the congregation. Thank you very much.